stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin,
welcome to episode number 186 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Plenty to talk about this week. Weeks to recap, Moose on the Loose, running news here and overseas. We'll have you covered for the next 60 minutes, I reckon. Maybe a quick show tonight. We always say about having a quick show, and it always turns into about 90 minutes. But hopefully we'll be done a bit quicker this week because we've got a few things to do in our personal lives, I'm sure. Welcome to my co-host, Bradley Croker, up in Canberra. How are you going?
Good, Brady. Doing well yourself?
Yeah, doing well. Thanks, actually. On a Monday night, pretty chirpy tonight. Feeling good. Julian Spence up in Noosa. How are you going?
Good, thank you. I'm definitely up in Noosa now. Up in Noosa.
Sometimes
you used to say up in Anglesey.
Ah, did I say up in Anglesey, did I? Because that's down from me.
Yeah, you did. Some people do. Some people go, we're going up to Melbourne. Or you say up to Melbourne, don't you?
No, I say down to Melbourne. I'll live like
yeah. That's right. That's the correct way.
Yeah, I think I got it right. Someone will probably correct me who's listened to the show and heard me stuff it up many a times. How you going up there, Moose? How's the holiday? How's the tan?
It's a work from home trip up here. I'm definitely not on holiday. I haven't been able to holiday at all, actually. It's going good. Just wake up, do some exercise, sort of clock in to work, and then head out for some exercise later in the day. So that's how it's rolling.
What, you're sitting on like a computer for like 6-7 hours a day?
Probably about six, I reckon. Like the exercise takes a while, and I'd say about six a day, six.
Hey, Brady, what about when I sent you boys a message last night saying you guys getting up to watch the Diamond League, and his response was, no, I'm on holidays. Yeah. And now he's trying to tell everyone he's not.
Got an axe blue collar and the microphone's recording.
Right. Nobody got up and watched that, did they?
Nah, I recorded it and then watched it this morning. It was, I basically turned all social media off until I'd watched it.
Not really.
Your VCR, got the VCR out.
Yeah, he wasn't replying to our messages this morning, was he, Moose, when we were talking about it?
I had to wait until Collis went down for a sleep, so I didn't watch it till about 9 o'clock.
Really? You hung on that long to see the result?
Yeah. I just like watching, like, once you know the result, it's hard to actually get excited about watching it, I reckon.
So you recorded on Foxtel?
Yep.
Can you, because I logged into my old man's Foxtel this morning at like, I don't know, like say 7 a.m, but it had already been on at 4. But then it said it wasn't on again until like 10 a.m. But can't you just go back and watch the stuff that was on previously?
Sometimes they don't put it up straight away. But I went in last night and set it up to record automatically at like 4 o'clock or whatever time it was on.
Yeah, so that's what I should have done, hey? Can you do that on a computer, or you got to do it through the TV?
I just did it through the TV.
Yeah, but then I'm worried if I do that on his account, then he'll wake up and be like, who's been recording athletics? And then it's going to be a giveaway that I'm logging into his Foxtel.
He's your dad. He's your dad.
I'm sure
he doesn't give a fuck.
It's not like he was stealing a random person. Jeez.
It sounds like you've got a really close relationship.
Yeah, you never know with my old man. Anyway, enough about that. Take us through your week, Croaks. You can go first this week.
All right.
Hey, before you start that, the funny story. I was trying to work out with this baby's due date, work backwards. And I think we worked out that it was like around the time that we stayed at your parents' house, Brady.
Oh, really? That's a good story for my
baby,
mom and dad.
The baby was conceived. It's actually
the 5K frenzy.
There could be no chance that it was in your parents' house. But I thought, oh, that would be funny if it was. I would just find another story about that, make up another story.
You did say you didn't sleep well that night, remember? The next morning? You're like, yeah, I didn't get much
sleep. Terrible sleep.
All right.
But it was a bit late for that, actually.
I'll let my parents know next time I see them.
Wasn't their bed, was it?
No, you're in one of spare beds. Yeah, probably hasn't had a workout like that in a while. Anyway, enough about this. Didn't expect this to be the start of the show. Croaks, you want to tell us about your running week, please?
Yeah, so Monday after work, went out for a shorter Mulligan's loop. So the two full laps is like 14.5K, but I have another run that I do that's just like 10.7K or so. So I did that one at 4:16. Tuesday out to the track, and the Mulligan's flat track club singlets had arrived, so handed those all out. It was actually a bit it was pretty cold to be wearing those singlets, but everybody that received them on the night put them on anyway. Looked good, so might ordered a few extras, so we might be able to sell a few if people are interested.
We might be able to sell a few.
We're
going thirds in the profits. Oh, I've been inside running.
Yes, anyway, session was 4x1K off a 200 jog on a 4-minute cycle. So everybody that was out there was doing 4x3 minutes off a minute jog. But I thought I'll be roughly covering a K in that time. So I just did 4x1K off a 4-minute cycle and was jogging 200 in that time. And then after the last 1K, jogged for like 2.5 minutes, then did 4 400s off a minute rest. And after the last 400, jogged a lap in like 2:15, and then did 4 200s off a 200 jog. And the 200 jog for that was about like a minute or a bit under 55 seconds or something. So it went reasonably well, like 305, 303, 301, 259 for the 1K reps. And they were all, I guess you'd call them like cruise intervals, where you finish it and within like probably 45 seconds of the minute jog, you're ready to go again. So it was like 15 minutes of, I guess, just high aerobic sort of work. 400s.
I would suggest cruise intervals are more like threshold intervals.
Yeah, well that, like that CV, like a 30-minute, like your 30-minute sort of race at pace. That's, that's
10K pace.
Yeah, about, for me, about 10K pace.
An hour pace.
I reckon cruise intervals are threshold stuff.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call my 10K pace cruising.
I wouldn't associate the word cruise with 259, like, 301 pace.
No, but depends. Yeah, like, so the terminology. So, like, I do this off, like, McMillan. So McMillan CV is roughly their cruise interval pace. That's how he puts them down.
I thought you were a Tin Man boy, Croaks.
No, I use McMillan's a bit.
Okay.
So I knew McMillan before I knew Tin Man. So.
But you're still calling something CV.
Well, hey, best of both worlds.
Just
Tin Man and McMillan. Anyway, it was
a lot of trademark issues here.
It was
your coaching business.
It was that comfortably hard pace, like where after 15 minutes you're like, oh yeah, I've worked a little bit, but within 2.5 minutes of jogging, you're good to go again. So that was the 1K reps. The 400s were between 65 and 66 seconds, and then the 200s were between 30 and 31. So probably a little bit too quick for the 200s. My calves were a bit sore the next day, just from obviously running a bit too quick. But I was happy with the session. A good mix of paces there.
Croaks, the fours, what kind of effort was that? Like, see, I've got it over now, 66, 64, 65, 65. Like, not mucking around.
Yeah, like it was, well, I guess for me, it's probably like, between 1500 and 3K pace.
Yeah.
Like it'd be quicker than 3K pace. Yeah. Mm. So it's like between 15 and 3.
Yeah.
That sort of pace, I suppose.
But obviously you're recovering pretty good in that minute to go again.
Yeah, but the good thing about these type of sessions where it's almost like three sets of something, and you're doing, the first set was like 15 minutes worth of work and you haven't pushed hard enough that you can't recover in 2.5 minutes jog, and then 4 200s as a set is only like eight minutes or so of work, and then you get another break, and then you've got you know, another 1,200, what was it, 1,400 metres or something of work doing the 200 on, 200 jog. So it sort of breaks it up. Whereas if I was doing 10 400 straight at 65, 66, it would be a hell of a lot tougher than just doing the four and then having a break.
Yeah. I like this session though, because you're touching a few different paces, like getting the lead turnover there, the 200s, the kind of, well, as you said, cruise intervals at the start and then some solid stuff in the middle.
Yeah, it was like 15 minutes of like tempo-y type sort of, you know, like just that threshold, just solid work where, and because that's the problem I think sometimes with doing a lot of track work is you don't get a lot of volume. If you're running fast, you don't get a lot of volume in. So by backing off the pace for those 1K reps allows you to get a bit more volume into the session. Anyway, so that was Tuesday. Wednesday after work, because it's getting dark now a lot earlier, by the time I get home and get changed and everything, I can't actually get my 80 to 90 minutes in out at Mulligan's before it gets dark. So I ran from home, which was actually nice. I haven't done this loop for a while. So it's about 5.5K, 6K from home down to Mulligan's, and then did a lap and then got out just as it was getting dark. And then the last half an hour or so was on the bike paths, which they're well lit. So felt a bit ordinary early on, but then after about an hour, felt awesome. 409s for 20.5K. Thursday, that short Mulligan's loop in 48 minutes, which is 4:28. I was like, just, I looked after both kids on Thursday. I was just cooked by the end of the day. So nice and slow for me. Then Friday, I actually had a really, my normal training partners that I've been doing sessions with on a Friday were out. One of them was still sort of getting over some sickness, and the other was recovering from the UTA. So I decided that I would do a Mulligan's fartlek, something that I've never done out there before. And I loved it because I had nothing to compare it to, had a rough idea of what I wanted to do. So the lap is just under 7K. It has a good mix of uphill, downhill, and flat sections. And there's lots of side trails, lots of like a few corners. So roughly there's probably eight or nine efforts within that 7K, ranging from sort of 600 meter hill reps, to 200 meters on the flat. Really good fun. I did a lap and an extra sort of 2K. To make it 9K, 3:24s, and it's something that I'll definitely do again. And there's probably a few different variations that I can do. Like there's a 1K hill, which this time around I sort of did 3/4 of it, jogged for probably about 100 meters on the, it sort of flattens off a little bit and then kicks up again. So I sort of just cruised a little bit on the flat and then kicked up. So I'd highly recommend doing those sort of sessions where you just go out, don't have anything to compare it to, just run hard, run easy for 30 minutes or so. 9K, 3:24s, not sure if I said that. Then on Saturday in the morning, 4:13s for my two laps of Mulligan's. And then in the afternoon, just went down to the synthetic oval and did 30 minutes. It said 4:05s, but it was probably being a little bit generous because it's only a 500 meter loop. After the 30 minutes, I did about 500 or 600 meter strides. Felt pretty good doing them, but I probably ran them a little bit too quick. So I woke up the next morning and just my SIJ and stuff back was just a little bit tight. So I think sometimes if I do those a little bit too quick, sort of things just lock up on me. Sunday was just over 2 hours. So I did 30K. In like 2 hours, 4:04 average. It was actually a bit of a grind, as I said, with my back and hips. I just never felt like I was moving that well, especially compared to like how I felt on Friday and even Saturday. But I got through it. 4:04 average for another week of 131. Yeah.
It amazes me how you can say you feel average and still hit 4:04 average.
Like
the days that I feel $1 million and get rolling,
I'm just stubborn. Like I stopped a couple of times just to stretch out. So I stopped at like 20K, and like part of me was like, why am I, because at that point I'd committed to at least like 20, like I wanted to try and get 30K, and and I still had the hilly section to go. I'm just stubborn. Like, but part of me was like, why the fuck am I doing this? I don't need to be running like 30K. But once I just make up my mind that I'm doing it, just do it. So, yeah.
The gray zone. The gray zone of training.
The gray zone. So, yeah. Anyway, Moose, speaking of training, how's yours going?
I'm getting the most fit outside of running I've ever been, actually. So that's my new thing. I've been running a bit. I'm not sure if I'm looking at it strangely. It says I did 100Ks worth of stuff, but I didn't actually. I did a lot less than that. I ran 8K on Monday. So that was Monday night when we got up to Noosa. Just ran 8K, test out the Achilles again. I think it was the first time run, so it didn't go that well. I just had some pain. I've sort of had pain the whole time, but obviously the injection and everything didn't quite work. I did run a few days before that, just maybe the day before. The jab was not successful. I have been doing isometrics and all the rehab stuff for the Achilles hasn't quite worked or paid off. Not really behaving like a normal tendon, because a lot of the time you feel better after doing those isos rather than before you do them, but it normally flares mine up a little bit. Next day, in the morning, went down and had a swim down at Noosa. So sort of gave myself this goal of swimming up here quite often in order to stay cardiovascular sort of fit. So I jumped in at the first point and swam along to the groin and back. So in the end, it was about 1275 meters. It took me about 24 minutes. So I don't know, like, again, I have no idea about swimming. It's a bit different in the ocean because you have waves, you have chop from the wind, and you have currents. So this, and you go through different depths of water. And so the waves sort of in the shallower areas, there was a little bit of swell. So the waves kind of kicked up a bit. That afternoon, I went for a jog. So jogged in the RC Elites. I thought I might as well have fun with my running if I'm going to get sore. With Ali and Bree to a dirt road and ran 6K out there. It's good to get it on the dirt. Like that shoe. Could probably use it for jogging, actually. It's got so much cushion. Yeah. Next morning, is a lot of this you probably can't see because it's just on private. But I rode Ali's workout with her, so she had a workout. It was terrible weather, so it was pouring rain. There was a fair bit of wind as well. It wasn't the ideal conditions. The workout was 4x3K with a K float, so pretty traditional start of marathon block session for us. She had a good workout. The route was okay, kind of messed it up a little bit. But yeah, pissed down rain, so torrential, with about a K to go in the workout, really heavy stuff. That afternoon, I think I went to the gym. So I signed up for a gym membership here, down at Frank's Gym, this sort of old school. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I've been to Frank's a few times because we used to have training camps up there when I was living in Sydney and being coached by Ken Green. So we used to always go to Frank's.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It feels old school. I like it. So got in there, like did a lot of Ali's weight session, and like I'm not used to that stuff. So I came out of there feeling good. Like I thought I was pretty going all right. And then the next morning felt real domsy. I went for I swam 1200 again. So I went down, did the same swim out and back. Took me a little bit less. I was a little bit faster this time, which was sort of progress. Then did a 10K jog just to check out a loop. So we were going to do a workout on this loop. We didn't end up doing it. But the group, so Jose came out, Ali came out, and I mean, Bree came out, and we ran as a bit of a group out here. The loop is okay, but it's kind of, there's a lot of estates up here. It's hard to know exactly how busy they are with traffic when you're looking at maps online. So to get out there and see what it's like was good, but we decided against it. Next day was the gym. So went to the gym again, and by this stage I was cooked. So yeah, I was smashed on Friday. I didn't run, had the day off. Oh no, sorry, I ran 7K after the gym. Next day was so smashed. So got up early, swam with Dave Kennett. So Dave is up here on a long sort of holiday trip as well. And he hit me up on Instagram, said, let's go for a swim. And I thought, yep, that's good to have someone to swim with. And I said, I'm not a very good swimmer, Dave. And he's like, oh, okay. I haven't been doing that much. And you know, that's the comeback when you say I'm not a good swimmer, that you know this guy's a fucking gun swimmer. And we started swimming, and within 10 strokes, he was probably 10 meters in front of me. And we swam out the point. So this one was like out from the beach a kilometer and then back a kilometer. And he was like, he would swim, wait for me, swim ahead, wait for me, swim in circles. While I caught up, it was quite embarrassing, but it was nice. It really challenged me, this swim. 2K is the furthest I've ever swum in one go, and in the ocean, swam for 37 minutes. That I was pretty happy with, like the challenge and finishing that effort. But then went for a run straight away after that with Ali and Jose, and then cooked. That afternoon, I was literally so smashed I could barely get up. Everything was sore. I ruined myself, and I didn't run the next day either. So next day I rode the bike with Ali when she did her long run. We met up with Peter Bock and a para athlete he trains called Dan Bounty, who's looking to go to the Paralympics in the 1500. I think he has a B qualifier. The Paralympics still has A and B qualifying marks. He has a B qualifier. He's run 13, and I think he needs to hit 408 for an A qualifier, but it's looking like that he might go. So we ran out there. I was on the mountain bike. We ran down the dirt tracks and for 20K, and then Ali, or 22K, and then we did it. I didn't do it. Ali did it. Pete jumped in. We ran a road around this estate, which was a lot more quiet. 3K loop. The workout was 10 kilometers worth of 3 minutes of marathon effort with a 1 minute float. So it went quite well, actually. It was good for it. Rained again, pissed down during the workout, but it was good for Ali to get some rhythm at that. At that pace late in the run. So she ended up doing 36K. So it was her first long run for the build. And yeah, I was pretty cooked at the end, had a very sore gooch. So I think my runs in the end, I think I might've done like 40K or so.
Do you reckon in future, yep, Croaks, we let him recap all the other stuff or just stick to running stuff on this
podcast? I don't know. I remember I copped a lot of shit about body balance and doing sessions on the bike, and I now know what the listeners have to put up with.
You know,
based on the last 15 minutes.
Yeah. That 2K swim was the equivalent, I think, in effort level of a 2:21 marathon, I think. So you should respect this. The triathletes know what I'm talking about. Got a lot more respect for the triathletes after this week.
I hope you start running soon. I hope you start training properly soon, Moose. I hope that Achilles comes good.
Yeah. So is this week going to be better, Moose?
Nah. Probably not, but I might run more.
Oh, Brad, I just got your message. Sorry, my phone was on Do Not Disturb. I wish I got that earlier. Sorry, Moose. Just talking about you.
Yes. What I did enjoy was the chat about you on the long run, Brad. That was good fun.
Oh, yeah.
With that's Peter right. Bock.
Yeah. About all the times that I beat Bocky.
He didn't mention that, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sure. That's not surprising.
Hey, Moose.
Tell me how much.
I was just going to say on a positive. Dave Kennett, absolute legend, though, isn't he?
Good fella, yeah.
Good fella. Good swag on him, too.
Yeah, it seems like a real rich fella, too. Real wealthy cat, I reckon. Right. 10-week holiday up here.
He's on long service, isn't he? Long service leave.
Oh, that could explain it. Yeah.
He's probably put in 20 years in his job or something.
Yeah, no, he's a good swimmer.
So are you going to run more this week? Like, does the Achilles feel better?
No, it doesn't feel better, but it didn't feel worse. So I think the idea is that we add load, and if it's not feeling worse and you're adding load, that's considered improvement in the tendon world.
What's happening with Gold Coast, Moose?
What is it, 6 weeks yesterday?
I mean, I'll probably get there and have a jog down there. I'll do something. There's no way I'll be racing it.
Pace a three-hour group.
Oh, I'll put a balloon on the back.
You should.
I couldn't do that.
The punters would love it.
Yeah, you should do that.
Hey, you could take the baton from Mona. Didn't Mona do that for like 15 years or something?
Mm. So you get paid as much as you get paid?
No, you don't get paid. You got to hit up Pat Carroll. Pat Carroll organises the paces. But I remember Mona did it for years.
Just man of people. Yeah. He wouldn't
got paid,
to get paid
for that shit, though.
Nah, not paid
his bill. No, he was getting. That's part of his.
Yeah, or Gold Coast Marathon would have paid him.
Running ambassador. For sure they would have.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Whole package and that'd be a part of it.
Anyway.
Hmm. So have you officially like emailed him and told him you're not racing? There's still a bit of hope there.
I emailed him and said I've got an Achilles niggle. Still waiting to see how we go. I mean, if it comes good in 2 weeks and I get a month of training, then I'll run. I certainly won't be racing at the front or anything, but I can still do a run.
Do the half with Mimus.
No, I won't be. I won't. Wait, what do you run for a half?
65 something, hopefully. Yeah.
2 minutes.
65.
2 minutes faster than my family.
It'd be good to see you in one of the races up there. Well, otherwise, you jump in with Croaks and take the lead females through 30K. Then ask for half the payment.
I don't think they'll split the money.
Croaks be fuming and just take half his pay.
Do that. He loves money. He loves money more than any of us. He still wears shoes from fucking 4 years ago.
He does.
Hey, Brady, tell us about your week.
Oh, well, Brad.
Tell us about all the running you did.
Yeah, I did do a bit of running. I had a down week. It wasn't actually that big of running. So, like, the last 2 weeks were 168 and 175. So this was a planned down week leading into the cross-country race on Saturday. Monday was just one run, 12.5K at 4:35 pace. It's a bit of wild animals going on here. There was a bull out of the paddock and a dog off the leash. So a couple of those ones, you know, when you start running down a road and then you see like a wild dog run around and you just like do a yui before you even get up to it. My Strava map, there's a couple of out and backs going on there. Yeah, on Tuesday morning, I did 30 minutes at 4:29. And then we went to the Shepparton Athletics track. So this was good. Hadn't been on the track for a long time and also hadn't trained in the PM in a long time. Like most of our workouts are early morning, so it's just a whole different feeling. Just being warmer weather-wise and just feel more awake, and you still do have a bit of fatigue from being at work for the whole day, but it was actually good being at work and not like being absolutely cooked from doing a workout. That morning, the workout was, it was a long one actually, so we had myself, Archie, Nathan Stoat and Glenn over there, so four of us doing this one. We did a mile to start off with, 4:47, and then a lap jog. And then it was eight sets of 400 in 68, 69, 200 jog, 200 in 32, 33, 200 jog. So every one of those sets is like a K. So yeah, that was kind of like 8K, just that kind of middle part of it. And then after the last set, we jogged for 200 before hitting a 212-800, where we went kind of like 67-64. It was meant to be a bit of a grinder workout, like the paces weren't set super quick, but more of one of those ones that's just going to hurt the longer you go. But I felt good, and all the boys were telling me they felt good throughout as well. And it wasn't probably until 200 meters to go in that last 800 that things really started to just feel a bit harder than the rest of the workout. So good signs. 200 jogs, probably generous. I think maybe if I did this workout in future, might try to do less sets of that middle stuff and maybe put a float in there just to keep it a bit more honest. But yeah, it was good. Awesome to see. Like, we finished, it was getting dark. I should have put my Coros in night mode, because if you guys have done it, you know how you flick your wrist and it lights up, but it's a bit delayed. So yep. Yeah, and on the track, like, it was getting dark and you'd flick your wrist and it wouldn't come on, and then you try to hit the light, and I should have figured that out before we started and just had the light running the whole way. And it's funny the way your vision kind of changes a bit with the effort levels when it starts getting darker. But that was good. Then we got off the track, and then Shep Runners Club, they start at 6 p.m. and there's no lights on the track. They just, like, you know, run on there off the lights near the netball courts and basketball stadium nearby. And there would have been 60 of them. So it was kind of cool to see so many people just grinding it out on a dark on Tuesday night. Wednesday, I jogged for 12.5K at 4:46. Just took it super easy. Had a terrible night's sleep Tuesday night. I think it was probably a combination of the workout and I had one of the cans of the St. Arlie cold brew, like, after work, because we were driving over at 3:30, so maybe a bit late for the caffeine. Just felt like I was tossing and turning all night. And then, I just took, I think I had my heart rate monitor on, 125 beats per minute, just made sure it was super easy. Listened to Road to Nowhere. I did get out of the bush, and then the local, like, council dog catcher guy was, like, walking around, obviously trying to look for a dog. And then I was just kind of cacking me dacks for the last half an hour, thinking the dog was going to run out of nowhere and go me, but I didn't see any dogs, which was good. Thursday, easy 7K in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I chucked my spikes on and just did like a bit of a warm-up, and then 15 minutes at like 3:15 pace, just on the grassy ovals, just to get my legs, like, used to the spikes and stuff for the race on Saturday. So that came out at like 14K at 4:03s. Friday was an easy day, 7K in the morning at 4:32s, and then 30 minutes in the afternoon in Rochester, a town probably like 20 minutes outside of Echuca. I dropped Hudson in Elmore, which is the other side of Rochester, to my mum. He was staying in Bendigo for a night, and then I just stopped for a jog there on the way home before it got dark. And then Saturday, went down to Lardner Park for the second round of the Athletics Victoria Cross Country. This was the first individual race of the year. Had a terrible night's sleep the night before the race. I think I maybe got 4 hours sleep. There was something going on in Moama, and this, like, loud screeching sound just went through, like, the whole town. And I still don't know what it is. I've been talking to all the neighbours and stuff, people at work. Not sure what happened. But anyway, I had a bad night's sleep and couldn't get back to sleep. We left at 8 a.m. for a 4-hour drive down to Lardner Park. Because I was super tired, I just thought I'd just have a bit of a cop out and just try and maybe come top 20. I think my time at Gels Park, I was the 24th fastest, so I thought top 20 is a good goal. And then I just got in the race and just, I don't know, about 800 in, just thought, nah, stuff it, moved up a few packs, got in a pack of some guys, Alex Ritchie, Sam Toll. There's this young kid from Mentone there. I'd never seen him before. He's got a massive mullet moose. You seen him? He's like this.
I saw the video.
Yeah, you seen that kid before?
Has this guy got another lap to run? No, never.
I remember he come up next to me at 3K, and I just looked sideways, and then I did a double take. I'm like, who the heck is this guy? Like, never seen him before. But the boys, when I was warming down, I was talking to Nathan Pierce, and he's like, yeah, no, he ran 14:31, like, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, like on the track in summer. And I'm just like, oh. Never met this guy. I heard this guy in my life, but it's just heaps of depth, I guess.
You live in Moama. You're not quite across the athletics.
Yeah, but I don't know. We kind of followed some results anyway. So he was in our pack. So I'm kind of moved up to this pack that was like, whoever was going to win this pack was going to come fifth. whoever was going to come last in that pack was probably going to come 10th, which I was happy with. Like, I think I've only come top 10 at AV cross country maybe once before. We kind of spoke a couple of weeks ago how I'm not great at cross country, and this is an absolutely like prick of a course. You ran this one before, Moose?
Yeah, Leiden I was Park? Fourth here once. Fourth
what?
Once.
What year? Yeah. No, you wouldn't have been. Fourth, yes, at Leiden Park.
Yeah.
What time did you run? I'm gonna look it up. What year was it?
Let me find it. No, yeah, you keep going. I'll tell you the.
You tell me what time ran. Oh, well, you just back me up and tell everyone how hard the course is.
It is a tough. I mean, it's a cross country course.
Yeah.
How fast it is will depend on how wet it is.
Yeah, it's pretty wet.
So, yeah, it's pretty damp through some boggy bits down the bottom section before you go up that hill with the switchbacks on it.
Yeah, oh, they're calling that Heartbreak Hill. So it has like a fence as well, Croaks. You jump this fence and then you jump like three ditches and then...
That's original, that name.
What is?
Heartbreak Hill on a running course.
I just heard, like, I think I heard Tim Crosby calling it when he did that interview.
How many fucking Heartbreak Hills can there be in the world?
So many races. Anyway, my heart was broken running up there. Yeah, so it was a tough course and just like so grassy. You put your foot down. I reckon like 60% of the course, you can't see where your foot lands. Even the start of it, you start at the bottom of a hill. Like your heart, like heart's coming out of your chest like 400 meters into it. Anyway, I came ninth. I was with that pack of guys and was feeling all right. And then we did these jumps and stuff at about 6K, lost a bit of traction. I'm terrible at jumping. I worry that like if I put my foot on the fence post, I'm going to get like my spike cord or my ankle's just going to snap instantly or something like that. So I just cleared it, and it's just a bad way to do jumping because you just land and you're just out of rhythm and stuff. Come ninth, which is good. I was happy with that. Michael Kernahan passed me with about 200 meters to go. He came flying past me. Always hate losing positions that close to the finish. But top 10, I'll take that. And like a big improvement for me after Gels Park, so I was really happy to actually average the same K pace I did from Gels to Leiden Park with two extra Ks and so much hillier. I think my time was...
What was your time?
What was your time?
25-25.
What did you run, Moose, when you come fourth? 25-25, yeah, I averaged like three.
25?
Yeah, I had a good run. What did you run?
I think...
How far was the course?
Yeah, I think everyone got it 7.9 or something. It's the same course you always run. I ran it back in 2010.
No. This must be different. Mine says 8.22.
Nah, same. The same course. What year did you run it? What time did you run?
I ran it 2015. 26.53. But
26.53.
Yeah, Steve Kelly was in front.
20. That's like 90 seconds slower than mine.
I reckon the course has changed just based on
course
the...
hasn't changed. I ran it back then. It's exactly the same course.
I don't know about this. Steve Kelly was a lot better runner than you.
You wouldn't have come top 50th with something like that on the weekend. Who was the top three? Course.
Well, see, Steve, you see, on the Strava segment, Steve Kelly, like 26.03, like he wouldn't have been like nearly what. 3 minutes, like 2.5 minutes behind Andy.
No way.
Yeah, but you never know if he was like, injured. How much did Steve Kelly win it?
But look at everybody on
what year was it? I've got all the results here because we've been using them for the looking at the old bat results. 2015. Steve Kelly didn't even win.
No, you know? Nick Whiteman won. That was.
Oh, and Doug Hamelock.
He
second.
Might have won National Cross that year too, did he?
Yeah, well, Nick might have come about 20th in this race on the weekend. So that does sum up. Just add 20 positions. Yeah. You would have come 24th.
It's a different Nick Whiteman. I've got Nigel Preston running in 7.81. That's half a kilometre different.
Yeah.
I reckon it's different. Zacha ran 27.44 in 2015.
And anyway. In 2015, he was going good too.
Let's compare apples with apples here, guys. Both ran the same course, if you ask me.
This is what you can't do this across country.
I actually didn't run it in 2015, but I ran it in 2009, 2010, and it was the same course as that year. It looks pretty similar here on the maps. Anyway, times are irrelevant in cross country anyway. Yeah. You don't even look at your watch the whole way. You just get around. It was good, tough running. Yeah, it was a good day, a huge day for the bats. Like, we won overall, which was good. Talk about that when we get to the results later on. And yeah, I was happy with that result. Put up a bit sore though, like sore hammies just from, I was in spikes, which was the only option because it was so wet and kind of muddy. And yeah, Zach wore next percent, so no, 4%, I think. He had a rough day in those things. Then on Sunday, then we got to, yeah, left at 8 a.m., got home at 5 past 7 p.m. Way too many hours in the car in one day. Got to stay down there next time, I think. Sunday, hour 45 by myself, 4:29 pace. We didn't go to Barman, just gave all the boys a sleep in and didn't want to sit in the car for any more minutes over the weekend. It was nice, it was sunny, just listening to music, and then just got out for 25 minutes watching the sunset Sunday arvo, listening to a bit of ballpark music. That was my week, 131 kilometres, which was good. So it's a good workout, good solid race, kind of, yeah, kind of you have a down week to kind of feel better and probably start this week feeling worse because your legs are still banged up from the race, but that's all a part of it. Should we thank our patrons?
What about on the video, how they only went to top 8?
Yeah, they put top 8 in the video, but then they showed me coming top 9th. What? You see, they kept the camera on me for a while, though.
Yeah, that's because you were getting outsped by Stixie Kernahan.
Did you should have seen how fast
Did he come
he
from
finished.
Behind you or what?
Yeah, behind me. You know that last big downhill? He was just just hear his breathing and footsteps getting faster and faster. And then, like, you do that, like, little dog leg turn to have, like, what is it, 200 metres on the flat? And I'm like, it's okay, just get to the flat, because I'm not great at running downhills. I'm like, get to the flat, you'll be able to outkick him. And then, he just put me to the sword. He's a quality cross-country runner, though, Kernas. I was, I said to him afterwards, I'm like, mate, that's a big kick down. You should be happy with that. So, yeah, what did he say? He was second. He ran the same time as Andy did for the last 800 metres. Mm. So that's pretty impressive from Sticks.
Maybe he should have gone earlier.
Well, he was with me early on, and then we got away from him, and then he pulled me back up. But, yeah, it's hard to judge efforts on cross-country.
And just to clear up, Brady, the course is slightly different from 2015 because I've opened up both maps. And it's
similar shape.
I've never run there before, but up the...
The top
like
right?
The third K, that sort of section. The
tough K. Top, I reckon they made it harder then.
Top right.
There used to be... Actually, I reckon I know the part. There's a bit of a like water tank or something we had to run around. I reckon, don't know if we had to do that last time.
It looked more like a hand and a finger up the top section, whereas it's not quite as, anyway. It's not great listening.
If you ran them both in 2015 and 21, write in and tell me how hard they were. Nick Whiteman, you said he won both. I'll message him now.
You can only race against who you race against, Brady.
Exactly right, Julian. Exactly right. Let's thank some Patreon supporters.
All right, I'll kick it off. Okay, I got Lockie MacArthur, lives in Preston in Victoria. He's got some pretty handy PBs. Run 3:45 for 1500, 8:26 for 3K, 1501 according to his IAAF profile for 5K, 67:44 for the half, and 2:28 for the marathon. The last two were probably when he was pacing his wife, Lisa Waitman. He did go to college in the US. He went to Rice University, which is in Houston, Texas. So thanks for your support, Lockie.
Thanks, Lockie, for your support. Moose, who you got?
I've got Mark Hadley. He's from Perth. 1801 man, 37:29, 1:21, and a 2:53 at the Gold Coast. Maybe the half marathon could be the pick. That's similar to... We'll call it go the half marathon. King of the negative split. Oh, I like that about him. I'm a big fan of people that can do that. Friend told us that he had a long-term running injury, but trying to take some inspiration from Croker, retiring, then coming back, then retiring again, then coming back again, and retiring one more time to be running well again.
Maybe you should take some inspiration moves. Maybe you should officially retire, and then you might get over all your niggles, and you'll come back and you'll cover the ground well again.
Not a bad
idea.
I could do that.
Anyway, thanks, Mark. You've got a great hero to look up to there.
I'm going to thank Eli Burke from Newcastle, maybe Sydney. I saw two addresses from him, 25:35 for 5K, 48:25 for 10K. Does a bit around Centennial Park there, which seems like the only part of like Sydney people running, isn't it? It's a very
big it sucks, Sydney. Yeah, I think it's a terrible running city.
If you're south of the harbour, then yeah, unless you're real south and you've got like the National Park down around Sutherland. A lot of people north will run around like Lake Narrabeen.
Oh yeah, I do see that somewhere too.
Yeah, and then there's the Bay Run, which is out Des Moines, but it's all concrete there. So yeah, in terms of grass, that's one of the best places to run, or only places to run.
Does a bit of running with the Turbo Runners, and this is a quote on his Instagram. Boys, tell me if you know what this means. Christmas is only beautiful in TV shows. It's getting deep. What do you reckon it means?
Oh.
That's all he's got written in his Instagram bio.
I don't know. As an Australian, I guess most of the Christmas shows are always like that, you know, white Christmas with the snow, and I reckon that does look pretty cool. I would love to experience a white Christmas one year.
Would you? Okay, put it on your wish list. Thanks, Eli, Lachlan, Mark, for your support. All the other legends over there on Patreon for their support. Road to Nowhere weekly and the back catalogue and the early releases, all that kind of stuff is on Patreon. If you like what we do and want to help the Inside Running podcast come out every week, you can sign up to Patreon to keep it alive. Let's talk about the Gateshead Diamond League, fellas, first up. The big 1,500 metres that we were really frothing towards. Well, I know I was. We saw Ollie Hoare, Stewie, Ramsden, Gregson all in this Diamond League. And Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who we spoke about last night. There was a big field, actually, way more people than that, but that's the people of kind of our interest over here in Australia. Croaks, you want to recap it? You watched it live. Well, you didn't watch it live. You watched it without knowing the results. So tell us about how the race unfolded.
Yeah, so I guess we should start, because we'll recap a few results here. The conditions were not great. It was wet and quite windy. And so the pacemaker went out, like it went out quick, like it was definitely low 330 pace through, like they went through like 56 seconds or something through 400. So they were on pace, but then once the pacemaker dropped out, like Stewie ended up being in front, as he often is, and it sort of slowed down a little bit. And then Ingebrigtsen got to the front, and yeah, Ingebrigtsen ran away with it. Trying to actually think of how it went down, but yeah, Stewie did a lot of work once the pacemaker dropped out. Ollie Hoare was able to sort of latch on to Ingebrigtsen, and I actually thought with maybe 150, 200 to go, I thought, oh, here we go, Ollie will sort of kick past him. But yeah, Ingebrigtsen was able to hold on. Ollie second in 336.58. Stewie still held really strong for third in 337.32. Ramsden was making a bit of a late charge, 337.98 for fifth, and Gregson was ninth in 345.36. I mentioned to you boys after I watched it that I was surprised that Stewie does so much leading. Yeah, especially in those sort of conditions. I get the feeling that Ollie didn't really care what time was run. He was there pretty much just to prove that he could beat the other Aussies to seal his spot on the Olympic team. That seemed to be the, I think, his tactic. Yeah, do you agree?
When he rolled up on the shoulder of Jakob, because he had to go get around Stewie first and rolled up there, and yeah, I thought he was primed to take it as well. But Jakob's so impressive. Like I think you said, Moose, like another gear, another level. It's not a really explosive kick. He just gets away from him, looks super smooth, and it's not until you look at the guys trying to chase him down that you notice like how much it matters with 60, 80 metres to go.
It's real subtle, isn't it? Yeah. His change of pace. And it's like he's got that sort of forward lean.
Yeah. Just but you don't even notice he's picked it up. And then you look at all the other guys and their arms and legs going everywhere and grimacing, and you're like, whoa, this guy just kind of looks like he did out the back straight.
Does that get Ollie on the team?
It's just another tick in another box, I think. I think it's probably just an accumulation of little wins for him on the path to selection. He's got to be very close. I know there's a lot of people calling now for like selection, but it's not fair on the rest of the runners to be making pre-selections when you're not automatic, well, no, in my mind anyway.
Yeah, exactly. you can't select him until the qualification period ends. But the fact he's beaten all these guys, somebody like Ramsden has to come out and run like a 3:31, you know what I mean? Like, to really put it beyond doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't just equal him. You need to destroy him. Or destroy his time, I mean.
Yeah.
Obviously, Stewie and Jai are locks already. Stewie, you can't go against. He beats nearly everybody and has run 3:30. So it's really now, and it's kind of only... Oh, I mean, it looks like it's only Matt Ramsden who can really do it. And he put it in for this one. Like, he made some moves. He had a full crack to try to get there.
Yeah.
So
he had lots of arms and legs in the last 50.
Yeah.
He was pumping. But it'll be interesting to see whether Ollie races the other Aussies again. Whether he stays in Europe or heads back to the US.
Because this was his first Diamond League, I think, I read today. There was a press release somewhere of a few of his quotes, and he kind of said he grew up watching these races and it was so good to be in them, actually competing against, like most of these guys, he said, for the first time. So,
as a side note of someone travelling back to the US, the Australian skateboarder, one of the female skateboarders in there, the coach tested positive for COVID, and so now they are not allowed to go to the Olympics, basically.
Yep.
It's very cutthroat with that, and I would really be wanting to limit my exposure to random people in airports, and travel is one of the worst sort of things for that, one of the worst risks. So I would be really careful in traveling around the world right now.
It's a good point, Moose, because there's sort of that trade-off, especially for guys like Stewie that are now like automatically on the team. Yes, you want some race practice before the Olympics, but then it's a trade-off between the risk of getting COVID, but also this is his career and this is how he earns his money. So it's, that's a tough one.
You would want some really stringent, like, in-house policies there, like within their training group, almost as if nobody brings friends over. Like, we're locked down here. Like, when we go running, we basically run as far away from people as we can. It's got to be super strict.
Mm. 5K, Morgan McDonald. Did you watch this as well, Croaks? I didn't watch this one.
Yeah, I did.
Fourth in 13:22. Dave McNeil, 15th, 13:54.
Yeah, so didn't see a lot of these guys running because once the top four guys cleared out, they obviously focused on them. But given the conditions, and Morgan looked real strong in that last 100, and I reckon 13:22 in those conditions, because I know the guy that won ran like 13:07, something like that, and the commentators were saying, you know, they thought that was worth a sub 13 given the conditions. So was it 13.5 qualifying standard, I reckon, is on the radar.
13.12. Yeah,
was that?
You said 13.5, didn't you?
No, 13.5?
Oh, yeah, sorry. As I said, I said the 13.5.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So he has to run under 13.5, I think it is. And I reckon based on that run in those conditions, he's there or thereabouts.
What happens, Dave McNeil, like, he just went out and ran 13.12 and then to 13.54? Like,
yeah.
That's so he was in that, odd.
Yeah, he went out. Like, he was definitely in front of Morgan early on and then just faded. I was sort of thinking the same thing as well. That you see this a lot in these big international races. Like, the difference between their top runs and their poor runs is probably a lot bigger than what we would do. You know, like, that's, what, 40 seconds? Slower than what he ran in Perth. And, yeah, conditions are ordinary, but, you know, like, you'd Brady, like, you'd very rarely run 40 seconds slower over a 5K, you know. But it sort of just happens.
Reckon Dave, though, he's such an emotional being. He lives, like, with his heart on his sleeve, I reckon. Mm. And if it's not there for him on the day, then it's not there. But then when he does get one where everything's lined up and he's having a good Dave day and things are like he's attached to the race more. You can see that he can pull things out that a lot of people couldn't. He can go deep into the fields to get a little bit more than some other people.
And you can't underestimate like the toll of the last 2 weeks of sort of being like an outside chance of making the Olympics to then hitting the standard. you know, like I personally would struggle to get up and race again 2 weeks later, knowing that I'm almost on the team. So
Called him on Road to Nowhere, and it was good. He had some really good answers and kind of spoke about what he's got coming up. I think he's pacing Mo Farah, actually, for his kind of 10K qualifying time. Had some good stuff to say. And then Nipper in the steeplechase, 10th, 8:36.
Yeah, he's actually led part of the race. So Ben Buckingham paced, and then once Ben dropped off, pace sort of seemed to just slow a little bit more, and then Nipper went to the front, and and then they've sort of ran away from him in the last two laps. But 8:36 in those conditions with sort of not really an even run pace is not a bad run.
Yeah, first off for him over there too, isn't it? Like maybe it sometimes takes him like two or three races over there to get going off the plane as well. Also over there, Moose, did you see Cheptegei fell well short of Daniel Komen's world record of 7:20 we were talking about last week. I think he ran 7:33. Anyone see this one? He kind of said it was kind of a speed test for me. First race as well, the same meet, Jacob Kipolimo ran 26:33 to be the seventh fastest 10K on the all-time list. So that was some good stuff over there. It's kind of good to see Europe popping up, racing. These big fellas are coming out to race. And Moose, Reese Edwards, marathoner, Australian guy. Tell us about his result yesterday.
Yeah, Reese, he ran a marathon called the S7?
Yeah.
Marathon. I think it must be like the highway they run down or something. That's my guess. Could be fully wrong. But you know, they have the M7 marathon here, or they used to. Well, it's a downhill marathon point to point. It goes 42 meters downhill. I think the legal limit's 43 meters of drop over a marathon. So they've basically created a segment of the countryside where they can go downhill to the absolute maximum allowed. It's a fast, Cam Levins won the race in 2:10 something and put his name in the hat for the Canadian Olympic selection. But Reese Edwards was, I think he was third place maybe?
Yeah.
The race. Yeah, and he ran 2:13. So that's huge from Reese. He's run some good races lately, hasn't he? Because he ran 2:16 when he opened up in Chicago a few years ago now, 2018. 80. Yeah, and then maybe he hasn't run like super fast. I think he might have run it. Whoa, he ran not that long ago. Maybe a month ago, didn't he?
6 weeks ago, wasn't it? Chestershire Marathon.
What did he run there? 2:15 or something?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe a bit quicker, maybe 2:14 high even.
If you follow him in Strava, like he does, like he's very durable. He gets through lots of work and lots of big marathon specific sessions. And he can obviously back up well because, as you said, his last marathon was only a month ago.
So is he sitting as our fourth best marathoner now behind like the three we're sending to the Olympics?
It probably would be. Paper.
Yeah.
Until we see a few boys roll around Gold Coast.
And so that time, we haven't seen a Commonwealth Games qualifying criteria yet, only the world champs. Their time doesn't give him a world champs qualifying. I'm not sure exactly. I'm the amount of spots, given that the way the Olympics has gone, will be tied up with auto qualifiers at the World Champs. But we don't know about the Comm Games yet. So he may be in the mix for the Comm Games. Say if Jack, Brett and Liam all run well and over the next few months or whatever and decide to do the World Champs instead of the Comm Games, and then the Comm Games comes out and releases criteria that's maybe a 2:15 qualifying time, then maybe Reese Edmonds is eligible or will be put his name in the mix for that.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Good point. Croaks, New South Wales cross country.
Yeah.
Coming back to Australia here.
Yeah, so they had
First up, explain, because this is confusing the hell out of me.
Same with me. Glad you're in the same boat.
This race is normally the first race on the calendar. So it's normally in April, and then it goes into Sydney 10, but this year they've changed around. It's called the New South Wales Novice Cross Country Champs. Now, to qualify, to be able to run in the novice race, you have to have never won a open state or national medal over 3 kilometres in distance. So that's, you know, all of the cross-country stuff on the road, 3K steeple counts, anything on the track. So if you haven't won a state or national open medal, you're eligible to race the novice and win the novice championships. And so I actually won this race in 2006. And, like, I like the concept because it just gives a lot of up-and-coming runners a chance to actually win a race. And then obviously once if you finish then first, second or third novice, you're no longer eligible to race in that race again. So they have two 10K races on this day. They have the novice race, which is the main race for the day, even though you'll have an all-comers race beforehand, which, you know, will often get faster runners because they're the non-novice runners anymore. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Imagine how confusing this would be.
So yeah, if you come second and third the year before, you still can't run it.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many people go in this race?
There's 24.
Yeah.
And then 26 in the main race, Moose.
Yeah.
Imagine that at AV. 11 women and 12 women.
This is the worst.
A waste of resources.
Yeah. This is the worst I've ever seen it. And I was actually going to message someone from Athletics New South Wales just to find out, like, what their thoughts were on it, because, like, the years I've been there, it's always been a pretty popular event. So to have, I guess, that, you know, that few people running was disappointing. In terms of the novice race itself, Max Mahone won in 30.11. The course was a little bit, like, it was 9.6, 9.7K. And Annabelle White won the women's in 34.27. In the all-comers race, Kieran Tall won that one in 29. Where did you get these results from?
29.47.
I thought it was just over 30 minutes.
I copied these straight from James Constantine.
Max Mahon was just over 30 minutes.
Yeah, I thought so was... Anyway. 29.47 for Kieran Tall and 34.39 for Belinda Martin, who won the women's.
Do they race separately?
They do.
It's a different race within the same race.
No, so two separate races, like 45 minutes apart.
Yeah, 29.47. That's what was written down here in the Facebook post he did.
Yeah.
Because I put a note there, but you've kind of explained it. I was like, I did the maths. Obviously, Athletics Victoria was the same day. So you guys had 50 men, we had 335, and you had 23 women, and we had 144.
Definitely not normally.
Why don't they show up?
I don't know. As I said, it's generally not. There's generally a lot more that turn up for this event, so I'm not exactly sure why. It used to be, in terms of the teams competition, I think back in the day, the teams comp, you only scored points for this one with the novice. Like, the novice race was the only way to score team points. I think it's now changed.
Why don't they just copy what Victoria's doing with the team stuff and the divisions and stuff?
Because there's just not enough. That's the problem. There's not enough depth in the teams to warrant all the divisions. It's just like the team concept in New South Wales is just nowhere near as strong as Victoria.
But you got to start somewhere. Like, would they just say, hey, let's just stick to it for 3 or 4 years and see if we can build it?
I don't know. There's just not the, like, there's a few clubs out there that have a strong history and people like to turn up and run for them. But, you know, there's a lot of people that now would just go, you know what, I'm not going to run that race because I'm going to focus on my upcoming marathon and train for that instead.
Yeah, okay.
I was shocked when I saw the numbers that competed.
You think about maybe getting off the couch and going down and supporting the next one?
Maybe.
You can't sit there and say you're disappointed and not go yourself.
Yeah, well,
maybe there needs people like you to start rocking up, big dogs.
Well,
put your hand up.
Yeah, it's 3 hours for me, whereas a lot of people in Sydney, it's 20-minute drive. So, yeah.
True, you don't even live in that state.
Was that?
You don't even live in that state.
No, I'm not actually even registered with the club at the moment.
We got yours coming, Bendigo Bats, mate. It's in the mail. Need you to sign the contract. Should arrive this week. I spoke about Leidner Park before, but Andy Buchanan got the win, 23-57. Cody Shanahan, 24-34. Tom Thorpe, 24-49. And then the 10 results there, boys. I told you about this before. There's a bit of something's going on here because Western Athletic should have scored 122 points. But it hasn't been updated on the website yet. I was talking to Nathan Pearce yesterday, and he's like, no, we scored 122, even though they're listed as 189. One of their guys who came in the 20s has been left out. So this is what I'm talking about here. Where you finish, that's how many points your team gets with your six people, and then the team with the lowest score wins a round. So Western A's, they should win Division 1 with 122, but they're not listed yet. But on the official results, Glen Huntley have won with 159, St. Stephen's 178, Melbourne Uni 187. For those people playing Divi 2, Bendigo Bats 122. Would have come equal first, fellas, in the Premier Division. But
how did you go with Div 2?
Well, we won pretty easy, I think. Won by a couple of hundred. Oh, maybe just 100 over Mentone. The Mentone Mavericks are pretty strong, though, in Divi 2 there. So keep an eye on them.
Regional cross-country? Is that cross-country?
Did you hear about Ballarat, Brad? Have you heard about what happened with them?
No.
So they couldn't get six people to do the race. They only had four finishers.
Oh.
So they got...
Ballarat, mate. Long way.
Yeah, well, tell me it was a long way. It's like the car for 4 hours and 15 minutes to get there. So
they got kicked to the very bottom.
Yeah, so they got moved straight to the bottom, and then your other mob, Moose Geelong, also could only had four finishes. Didn't Mono like crack
what
it?
Wait,
yeah, well, get it. It's a country round as well. How much of that's a joke? Unless you live in Terrell, then it's a massive drive for everyone else in Vic country. So what happened with Ballarat, Moose? Didn't Mono get everyone around the lake last night, Sunday night?
The caller around, yeah. I don't know what happened, mate.
That's what Andy Buchanan said. He reckons he big call out if you're serious, get down the lake for a lap of the lake, and we'll discuss what's going on. Because you boys are going to get relegated.
How the fuck would Andy Buchanan know?
I don't know. The other podcast when we talk about this stuff, he was telling me about that last night. He reckons Mona, and then I see Ash Watson uploaded like a 30K run this morning. So I reckon they're getting all the boys together. Because that's pissed off. If you can't get six people to finish the race. I reckon you got to get all those old dogs like Watto, Nath Hardigan, Shane Nankervis, Mona, bring them all back.
That's immediately off those names.
Hey?
Doesn't matter how old they are. We would beat your team immediately. It doesn't matter how old they are.
That's eight more rounds. We'll see how you go.
Just by naming those names, all of a sudden, better team.
Jack Davies, get him back. Maybe Stewie flying back. That was a good day out there. The women's race, Karina Fife, she got the win, 28-34. Just about to be announced new Runs PB coach, actually, Karina. Sarah Klein was second, 28-38. Stella Radford in third, 28-41. Glenn Huntley, they only have five finishes, but their score for their five runners was 35. They had first, fourth, eighth, 10th, and 12th. That is an amazing
That's
team.
That's dominating.
Score. That is, yeah, imagine coming 12th and you're the last person on your team. Melbourne Uni 137 points, South Melbourne third in 161 points. So a lot of results there to recap. Let's move on to the listener question, Crokes.
All right. Hi guys, the discussion from last week about prize money for the TAN race got me thinking about how fans of the sport can support athletes like Lyndon and Stewie that are doing amazing things. Do you think there is a role or need for fans to support elites? And if so, what would that look like? For example, we can sign up as a Patreon for IRP and buy merch from Surf Coast Track Club. But besides liking Instagram posts or entering races that pay appearance fees, there's little opportunity for fans to connect with those at the top of the sport. Thanks for all your work, Ben.
Good question from Ben, wasn't it?
Good question. It is a good one, yeah. Mm. Because I think there are a lot of people, like we have seen, there are a lot of people through even just communicating with the general punters on the podcast here that people want to support our elites. They like whatever they can do, they will throw in their effort or their funds or whatever to sort of get some exposure for the elite runners and some funding. You saw the nights we had, like that night we had at Nike, where everyone showed out and just wanted to sort of connect with the elites and stuff.
Oh, we just seen your download numbers and stuff like that. Like, people want to know about them, which is good. But then his question is, well, how then do you support them? I think I think team components really important. I think like the teams like Bowman Track Club who do it well, and then sell their merch as the Bowman Track Club, and then you'd like to think that filters down to the athletes in some kind of way, is a good kind of thing. So that's kind of like merch, but a lot of these guys are kind of individuals, and I'd never want to see them go down the kind of like crowdfund my trip overseas kind of route. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it has to get to that. But because I think that's just a bit corny sometimes. Not corny, I don't know. Like, yeah, we don't want to beg. We don't want them begging for money and saying, hey, if you want to support me. Do you know what I mean?
The problem is that AA, like, no one's going to give AA money because of the, like, bureaucracy involved.
Yeah.
So they want to know the funds go directly to the athlete.
Yeah, 100%.
So, I don't think it's corny or it's a very embarrassing thing. Not an embarrassing thing to do, but it's almost a cringe thing to do, to ask for money to go away.
And you wouldn't expect other professional athletes at the similar level in other sports to be doing it. So these guys shouldn't have to do that.
But that's why there has to be a process or system that gets funds from their sport, which is basically the mass participation. Like, what happens in AFL, like, people buy memberships to the AFL or whatever. Yeah. And then that fields down to player salaries with sponsorship and all the rest of it. Whereas in athletics, your membership to AV don't pay the athletes.
We've got a Bendigo Bats membership coming in the next couple of months, if you're out there wondering. So just hold on to your pennies. But
okay. So let's
get a sticker for your car.
As an example, someone pays
Croker's registration,
like a membership. Yeah, and are you guys funding Andy's trip to the Gold Coast for the Melbourne Marathon?
Nah, we'll probably use it, and it won't be much. It might be like $5 a year, but we'll use it to pay like the kids' regos and stuff like that, because that's about $300, and use it for like petrol for the people that go on the bus and things like that. So you almost become a stakeholder of the. Like, I don't think it'd get to a stage where you've got excess money and then you say, hey, like, it'd be great to say, hey, let's buy everyone a pair of shoes and stuff like that. But then you also need to give the members something back. So, like, then you need to, like, I don't know, if they get some free merch, or you get the newsletter from the team every week or some kind of thing. It needs to be a bit of a transaction there as well, which I think that Bowman mob do pretty good. But, yeah, say it was Linden and it's, you can be a member of Linden Hall. You can pay $5 membership a month. She gets on Zoom once a month and does a Q&A, or she just gets an update about what she's up to. She lets everyone know her races, so you know what races to look out for. She clearly documents where the money's going, so you help me pay for this flight or this pair of shoes or whatever. I guess she gets her shoes for free.
But why does she have to do that? It's her money, and it's a set. Like,
I just think it would make the people paying the membership feel more like invested in her as someone they're supporting.
Feel like, I think that gives them a chance to own her, which they don't.
True.
And like, you're not going to go and go, hey, Nick Natanui, like, I paid my membership. You're not fucking going out for dinner there. That's expensive. Like, get back at home and eat that box microwave meal. Like, you can't. She deserves the cash as not just as an athlete, but that's her. Like, her.
Yeah, and maybe you'd have that documented when you sign up, kind of thing. But then I don't know. Yeah, it's a lot for her then to manage as a person who's just trying to perform. Like, the AFL footballers aren't managing the club's memberships. People are doing that in admin roles who are getting paid for it and stuff.
See. Like, I actually listened to a podcast the other week about track and field and where it's gone wrong. And
was it how Magnus and Marcus?
Yeah, it was.
That was actually good for them, wasn't it?
Well,
I'll listen to that same one.
And so, you guys compare it to football, which is fine. And this is what this podcast was trying to get at, was that you sign up to Geelong, your athletes that you support are out there for 25 weeks or whatever straight. And what this podcast was saying, that the problem with a sport like track and field is it's controlled by something like the Olympics, where people just go missing. All that the athletes care about is running a particular time, once off, making the team, running at the Olympics.
Which then results in getting their funding.
Yeah, whereas if you had athletes competing on a circuit, which obviously happens over in Europe, but it's like they compete week, like, you know, we train, and most weeks we run pretty hard at least once a week. So like racing, maybe not every week, but every second week for a while is quite manageable. And yes, maybe it's not for peak performance, but it's more about the spectacle to get fans through the door, because you're going to be seeing your Stewie every week or every second week. And yeah, he's not going to be at his peak all the time, but that's also good, because potentially then an underdog might beat Stewie, but it gets them on the track very regularly, and it, I guess, gets the supporters interested in the sport again.
Yeah, they use that example about LeBron as well, how like they were starting to rest him a lot, and then the NBA is like, hey, he's one of our star players, let's not be resting players, like he needs to be there every game.
So I'm all for comparing it to football, but then the athletes also need to, I guess, you know, be out there regularly. Like the footballers, like the basketballers. And I know it's a bit different.
And you need to know when they're competing. Like, that was another point they made. Like, you might only hear that someone's in a race 3 days before. And it's like, well, this is hard to follow, like, and hard to be a fan of this person.
Didn't they compare track and field to, like, a travelling circus sort of thing? Or like a monster truck show?
Yeah,
just moves around. You know, it's in for one show, for one night, and that's it.
Yeah, and you only know the day before when it rolls in.
Yeah.
And then they said, like, people who are successful, like... you know, musicians that play big city arenas and stuff, like Beyonce and that, like, you know, she's coming a year out. I enjoy that podcast.
There's something in it, and it is definitely team, like the whole Nitro thing.
And I think Japan do it well, you know what I mean? How they got their teams are funded by corporates, and they maybe give them jobs, and then you know when they're going to race against each other, and you know the personalities on each teams, and people jump around on different contracts and things like that. And and it's got their eyeballs on it over there. I think the team model's massive. Imagine that. Even, like, I know I talk heaps of shit about Bendigo in this cross-country season, but imagine if there was money in the AV season and people, you know, Andy Buchanan gets to the end of the season and goes, hey, I'm going to Ballarat next year because my contract's triple what it is for Bendigo. Stuff like that.
And I was going
to
mention,
you know,
Brady,
his 10-race season, and then someone else goes to Bendigo because now we got money free.
Don't want him.
Not paying Bendigo. Not paying him.
And this is where the culture of your cross-country down there, or the XCR, whatever they call that series, is... You get guys like Liam Adams turning up every week to run, regardless, you know, just to score points. Like, you know, he ran on the weekend.
Yeah.
He probably could have.
He tempo. He ran straight to the finish line and kept running.
Exactly. But this is the whole concept of he's there to score points for his team. Yes, he's not going to be performing at his best every single week.
Yep.
But if the athletes are out there every single week, then it gets the fans excited that they can at least see them.
Yep. And you race differently, and you commit to things differently when you know there's more to it than just yourself
and
the individual.
And Liam's only running because of the team. If he wasn't there to score points for his team, he wouldn't run it, I don't think.
No, I don't know. Liam would probably still run it.
He'd run it to win it.
So, yeah, but I don't know that his answer was, how do you support those individuals directly?
I'm sure you could just donate the money.
Slide in their DMs and say, hey,
mate, I really want to, like, Matt Ramsden, you go, I want to help you on this trip, how can I do it? And
like Warnie, well, like Warnie with Stewie,
exactly, though. Like, and, but you could, I'm going to throw you $100, this will look after a couple of meals for you, here's some travel money, like, whatever. All of a sudden 10 people chip in, there's $1,000, there's his food covered for this whole trip in Europe.
We almost need to set it up. Like, imagine if someone was smart and set that up and said, hey, here's the 10 athletes we're going to support. If we can get 100 people to all chip in $50 a month for the next 4 months while they're overseas leading up to it. You know what I mean? Like, do the work for them. And then it's like, all right, we got this many people, now we're going to split that amongst the 10 people we've chosen who, And then, yeah, don't know.
I would.
You got spare time?
No. I was just saying, if I was
looking at that, 30% cut.
Yeah, 30% of Julian.
Tomorrow, I'm going to set up a page where if anyone wants to donate money to me, they can.
Yeah.
No, I'd be happy to donate to these.
And then it gets to October, and everyone's like, "Why is Moose still on? Why is Moose still at Noosa?"
Yeah, I'm a professional ocean swimmer now. Didn't I say that?
Thanks, Ben, for the question and your Patreon support. That one did come from Patreon. Moose on the Loose, purchase of the week.
So Moose on the Loose, straight up. Where are all the shoe haters now when Kip Limo runs 28:33 or whatever he ran, and ran seventh all time in the 10K? According to the fucking shoe people, that's like 30 seconds for a 10K. So none of them are out here saying, okay, this guy could have run 26:03 in the Dragonflies, are they? Did you hear anyone say that?
No, he just doesn't like them either, does he? He just doesn't think they're comfortable, so he went old school.
So, no, but this, let's use your own logic on yourself, old haters. If you're going to say, oh, Kip the guy ran 26:17 or whatever he ran, oh, but those shoes are worth 30 seconds, so he probably ran like 26:40 or something. Well, this guy ran 26:33 in traditional spikes, nothing different from any other spike. You've got to take that 30 seconds off and go, this is the greatest run that we've ever seen in history right now. So, okay, you disappeared for this one, didn't you? Oh, don't worry, we'll see you back next time. Oh, when Chapter Guy gets the 3K record, we'll talk about, oh, he didn't get it. No, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to shut up and piss off back into the like the dark depths of Twitter. Just waiting. All they do is sit there and wait until something good happens, and then they jump on the shoe argument like nothing else. But as soon as someone does something not in the shoes, they don't come out and say anything. Oh, it just drives me insane.
Oh, really? Couldn't tell.
Yeah, it does.
That was good for you.
No, well,
no, I'm serious. You got worked up. I like that.
That's you can what I was, choose.
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah, you can't.
And you put logic into it. I like it.
The other thing is, Queenslanders love some concrete, I tell you. Up here, there is just concrete everywhere. You find like the nicest little trail, like it would have been a beautiful little dirt track. Oop, concrete footpath in there for sure. It's just, it's quite frustrating up here. Did you find that, Croaks? Noosa? A lot of concrete?
Yeah, we pretty much did everything around like the, is it National Park there? Tanglewood Track.
Sandy. That kind of sucks.
We pretty much did like our long runs, like laps. Because you get, I can't remember how far a lap was. It was like 8K, something 9K. But yeah, it's real sandy.
Sandy and his influences everywhere. You know, the influencer that we're giving Ali's copying a lot of shit here because she got on the front cover of Runner's World wearing long tights with a crop top. Which is just like no runners ever do that. Like that's like wearing tights with no shirt when you're a male and going out for this really weird thing. But she's ended up on the front page or the front cover of Runner's World. But that's actually a thing up here, long tights and crop tops. And you see people out walking all the time and it's classic influencer behavior. And they clog the paths up here. It's hard work. You've got to get out of town. 10 minutes out of town, you're on some dirt. But if you want to do like the town run, like you said, run out to the national park and around that, there are some crowded trails and no one likes moving.
You did some research on this place before you went there, didn't you?
Yeah. But there's only so much. Like I reached out to heaps of people. And they sort of said, yeah. But people are funny. Like some people love concrete. Some people think it's the best to just get on a concrete path and I don't know. We're coming from the surf coast. We're pretty snobby about our dirt roads.
And it's the same here. Like I've known there's been a couple of people from Canberra that have been on the Gold Coast recently and they've had to do everything on the concrete and like every run they're sort of complaining, going, I can't wait to get back to Canberra to get on the trails. So, yeah, I think, yeah, if you didn't know any different and all you ever ran on was concrete, you wouldn't actually realize how good trails are.
Yeah, and how good on the body that, like, they just feel so much better after a run.
Yeah.
On the trails. Yeah.
What's coming up? We got Doha Diamond League, Stewie, Ramsden, Gregson in the 1500 there, Genevieve Gregson in the steeplechase. And then over in the Netherlands, anyone know how to pronounce this city?
Nijmegen?
Nijmegen? I don't think that's right.
Nijmegen.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. Jai Edwards, Pace and Rory Hunter in the 15. Izzybat Doyle and Rose Davies in the 5K. So that could be the race to watch on the weekend, I reckon. See if those girls can get the 5K time, especially Izzy after coming so close to it at Box Hill that night. What also is coming up is our live show at the Gold Coast Marathon in just under 6 weeks' time. Thanks to Morton Australia and ASICS Australia for partnering with us on this one. We put the tickets on Patreon yesterday and we've sold out 49% of them. What day do tickets go on sale publicly, Croaks? Do we decide that? Did I put that somewhere?
That's,
is it this Friday?
You did put it out.
Yeah, let me check that. So this is there's no more tickets after this goes, is there, Croaks? This is room capacity.
Yeah, so we've got capacity for 200.
Didn't expect that many to go on Patreon, to be honest. I think we guessed 50, and 98 have gone already. So depending on when you're listening to this, you might have to get in quick. They do go public on this Friday at 8 a.m., the 27th of the 5th. So stay tuned for a post on social media there. And we'll put those out. It's going to be a good afternoon, fellas. Have a couple of beers, do the live show, chat to a few listeners. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I had fun a couple of years ago.
Trying to book the who's going to be the live interview, or maybe a couple of live interviews for the afternoon. It's hard, though, with everyone racing.
A couple.
Yeah, it's hard to lock them in, though. You don't want to lock it in, though, if someone has a shocker. Hey?
Everyone that's going to be on the marathon team will be up there racing.
True. Yeah.
That's pretty unique situation to get everyone in the right spot like that.
That is, isn't it? It's going to be some great racing. Can't wait to preview that leading in. Starting to get some see some juicy ones on Strava, some workouts, which is good. What's coming up in your life, Croaks?
Probably a bit more training in the grey zone, I'd say.
In the grey zone. Might get in a park run or something this week, have a bit of a race?
No, so actually doing track tomorrow night, doing some 400s, doing some long hill reps on Friday, and then might have a long run down around Lake Burley Griffin. Going a bit quicker, or we might push it back a week later just to help a few people that are preparing for Gold Coast. So, yeah.
Very good. Moose, what's going up in your life?
I'm actually back in Melbourne on Wednesday for a conference Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, come back Friday night. There's a few cases today, four cases in Melbourne.
COVID blow up in Melbourne?
Yeah, four cases, apparently all from the same family or something. So we'll just keep an eye on that, make a decision late, whether do we actually go, because worst thing would be to get down there and not be able to come back.
Yeah, get stuck.
Yeah.
What about you, Brady? What's coming up?
No, I do a bit of teaching, Croaks. My mate Crammers is coming up this weekend, actually. You met Crammers before? Moosey buys half your shop every time you sell something. He's a good customer.
I think so.
Yeah, he's coming up. He barracks for Geelong, so he's coming up. He wants to watch a footy with me, Geelong and Collingwood, on Saturday night. So have a few beers with him, watch that. That's about all I've got coming up, I think. Working, training, gonna have a big week this week, I think. Try to put in a few K's. That's about it. We'll throw to 20 minutes of Road to Nowhere. See you next week, fellas.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Bye. See ya.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 15 of the second season of Road to Nowhere. I'm Nick Earl, the loser of Hobart City to Casino on Sunday. But it's the taking part that counts, so, you know, we're all winners in the end, aren't we, Joel? Yeah?
Absolutely not.
No comment.
No comment? Okay. Welcome to my co-host, mate of mine described him as one of the other ones of the MTC.
So, what does that mean?
He was saying that, yeah, the big boys are all recognizable, like Jack and Brett and Rambo, etc. And then Joel's, oh, he's just one of those background ones, isn't he? One of the other ones.
I think that's the first time I've ever been offended.
Yeah, that is super offensive.
I was like, I am using that. That's
maybe in, maybe in physical appearance, but not in personality. There's no way.
Yeah, I think
no, and not running, even in physical appearance.
Running scene. I think the no, running think scene.
No, like, well, it's because I'm not as good as them either.
Exactly. I think that's what it is. And
performance based. Hey, I've actually got no offense with that. It's more if you were talking about personality. If I was Thor of the background, there's no way. So what's just, his name? What's his name?
I'm not throwing him under the bus.
Oh, he saw you at Eaglemont,
and he was just like, oh, you know, Charles just one of those
Eaglemont.
Loved it.
It's so funny. He must have something against me.
So, Joel,
he's getting bullied.
I was going to ask you your thoughts on that, but
I'm giving him my thoughts.
Yeah, you did. That's exactly what I wanted.
Eaglemont. The thing is, it's best you don't, because I would actually make him feel uncomfortable. If I saw him at Eaglemont, I would bring it up with him in front of everyone. I go, so guys, well, I'm just background.
Oh, yeah. Background.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get this rolling. Yeah, welcome to my other co-host. Rumours are that she's filming the third Endless Summer movie. Ellie Pashley, how's Noosa?
It's good, actually. It's raining now, but yeah, we've had some sunny 25 degree weather so far, so pretty happy.
Yeah.
When did you get there?
Yesterday. Yeah. Jose and I actually drove here, so we had a bit of a
How long that
day. We left Saturday morning, and then we just drove to Sydney Saturday, then Sydney to Yamba Sunday, and then Yamba to Noosa Monday. So I think it's like 21, 22 hours, but yeah. It's
you broke it up. Yeah, cool.
Pardon?
You broke it up nicely by the sound of it. I saw you running in Sydney, actually. I figured you'd flown into Sydney.
You can't use broke it up as an explanation for what you're saying, because Ellie's going to think you meant breaking up.
That's exactly what I thought you meant.
I know. When you said that, you're like, and she, I
oh, I see.
Panic. We've had
internet issues in Noosa.
Ellie's
they haven't got the 4G here yet.
So Ellie's standing out in the rain while we record this podcast, but, you know, she's a professional. She's going to get the job done.
Yeah, we thought this was supposed to be a fancy town, but, yeah, they don't even have internet, so.
Yeah, you're sounding good now. Yeah, so, ladies and gentlemen, like, Ellie's internet was breaking up a bit before, but it sounds
not
good
just a
now.
Bit. It was really, really bad.
A lot. Yeah, okay. So we're a bit different tonight. We are going to go into the phone a friend right away.
Yes.
Just so it's a bit more predictable for the person, because we always take ages doing our weeks. So Joel, who we got?
Yeah. So, we are ringing David McNeil, hot off his amazing run the other night. I met Dave for the first time when I was about 14, 13 years old at Doncaster Athletics. We had the same at Doncaster track. We had the same coach, Irish Tom Kelly, and Dave. My first memory of Dave was him coming. He must have been first year college, and he was coming back from his college break, and he had a rat tail, and he came to the track, and I was young, and I was I was impressionable. And I saw this guy, really good runner. You know, I was 4 or 5 years younger than him, and he had a rat tail. And I thought, fuck, he must be really hard as well. Like, you know, he's a fucking hard ass. Like, he's sick. And, 10 years later, I know Dave is the biggest soft cookie on earth. So welcome, Dave. How you going, mate?
Yeah, I'm good.
A so rat Dave, tail. Mate. I'm impressed. Yeah, I never would have picked it.
Once upon a time, I was a walking anomaly.
and now he's the walking heaps good runners meme, the anemic runner with a big cheerly. Is it cheerly, the hat or whatever? So Dave is joining us from London. Am I right?
Correct. Yeah.
When did you get there?
Thursday last week. So what's that? 5 days ago.
Yep. And your first race up is?
this Sunday in Gateshead in the UK. So I guess relatively local, but up the other end of the country. Running 5K.
Sick. That's I got embarrassed on run the other week, talking to a bunch of people, and they were asking me where you guys had gone off to, and I was like, yeah, they've gone off to Gapshead. Gapshead. I was calling it Gapshead, and I was talking with a lot of confidence, and I was like, yeah, they got off to Gapshead. It's a weird name. So, yeah, Gapshead, and they've got like a race over there. And then Brett goes, Joel, it's Gateshead. And then it wasn't until 2 days later I walked past a wine in the bottle shop and it says Gapshead. I'm like, that's where I got the fucking name.
I thought you were getting Stansted or something. Like, mixed up with something else. But I was
Gatwick.
It was funny last week when Joel was going, I'm not sure where they're going. And then you mentioned London. I was like, Joel, how could you forget London?
That's not what it was.
He said it's a weird name. And he's like, London.
You dickheads. So, we actually we stopped recording the podcast, our podcast last week was it last week? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we stopped mid recording to watch you race, and let me tell you, if you didn't perform like you did, you certainly wouldn't be getting called this week. That's for sure. You'd be thrown to the bottom of the list with all the other with all the other people. But now, you know, we're star fuckers. We want to call you straight off a PB. So welcome.
Yeah, congrats, Dave. That was so good to watch. That was awesome.
Thanks, Ellie. Yeah,
that was great. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, well done. What were your expectations going in, actually, Dave?
Yeah, I honestly, it's kind of been the same all year. I've wanted to try and run PBs this year. I think at our level, I've spent so long, trying to get to certainly big races and be competitive, and that's still absolutely a goal. But it's been a while since I really did just focus on time, because it is kind of, it's very individual. I guess a little bit selfish, I guess. And so that was the goal. And 13:18 had been my best from 2012, and training had been going well. I'd had some not great race results, but I'd been proud of how I'd been running, been a bit more aggressive than I usually was. So
that 3K wasn't a great result, the 7:46?
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, he's talking pre that.
So, I mean, I started my season at Box Hill with a 13:40-odd 5K and, wasn't a great showing.
13:40, you are shit, mate. All right, hang on.
Yeah, you might as well quit. Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, yeah. Look, I've had a reasonably good season, but I guess some of the races, like National 5K, National 3K, I was happy with how I ran. I just wasn't so happy with the result on paper. Yeah. But I think I got a lot out of those races, just actually like backing myself and putting myself in the mix, and not necessarily paid off. But anyway, I think that I was in good shape and I was in a good frame of mind, and talking to Nick the week before, the goal was to go through 3K in about 8 minutes. And we were spot on, literally spot on 8 minutes as we went through 3K. And he said, or Stewie will probably try and pick it up a little bit over the after 3K and try and get Rambo under the time. And he just sort of said, yeah, just try and keep it together. It'll probably get pretty uncomfortable, but just, try and hold on and not blow up. So that was kind of the goal, and I figured, well, if I can get under 13:20, I'd be pretty happy. PB would be even greater, I was in the zone. I was just so focused on what I wanted to do, and was just, you know, following Rambo's footsteps. And then, about three, four laps to go, I kind of looked up and saw there was a little gap between him and Stewie. And I probably hesitated for 100 metres of what to do, and then just thought.
Damn straight you did. Because I was screaming, at the TV going, go fucking round. Brett and I were like, go round. And then obviously you heard us screaming, so you ran round.
Yeah, must have. But thought, fuck it, bridge the gap. And I got in there, and then Stewie kind of went wide to pull off, and I said, nah, one more, Stewie, one more. And so I went one more lap, and then two laps to go, I tried to empty the tank as smartly as I could without, blowing a gasket too quickly. And it probably wasn't until a lap to go that I even thought about the Olympic time. I'd really just been thinking about, try and have as good a race as possible, stay in it.
What was the clock on the lap to go, Dave?
I'm pretty sure it was 12:15 or 16. I think it was 12:16. Oh, so hell. I knew at that point, like, oh, actually I've got a sniff here. Cause I remember I remember the first time I broke 13:20, it was same thing. The clock was about 13:24, 25. I was like, have a crack at least. So tried to empty the tank and came down the home straight and crossed over. And you know when you cross over and the clock's going and you kind of think, oh yeah, it's I've probably hit 13:13 or something here, but then you always get the result.
No, none of us know what the heck.
It's always like a second slower or 2 seconds slower. So I was like, oh man, I've probably come real close here. And it was deja vu because it happened once before. I missed the world's qualifier point by 0.01. So I was like, oh man, this is going to be close. But I at least dipped on the line this time, which I remember the last time I didn't do that, and it cost me. But then I just kind of turned around and asked the crowd was like huddled around on lane four or something on the track, and I just asked one of the guys, did I get it? And he goes, yeah, you got it. And I just yelled out a really loud fuck. And happy days.
Yeah, it was great to see. I think it's funny now you saying that, even talking about that dip and at the end there, because what you mentioned, how you've become sort of tougher. I've noticed that in your racing this year. Like, I've obviously run with you, trained with you a lot as a fellow MTC, but even, like the way you ran at the Tan race, even though you didn't have the best race, you're fucking aggressive from the go. You were chasing down Stewie, all us lazy pricks were sitting on you. And then even at stall again, Brett told me you just went out so fucking hard, and Brett couldn't even get on you at stall. And then you just towed the whole group around, and obviously you got tired towards the end, but it's like that new aggression that you probably haven't had for a while. Yeah. It's like a new Dave.
And you could see it on your face in the last 800. It was like you just looked so determined, and you just looked like you were absolutely flying. It was really cool.
Sorry,
go on, Dave.
Oh, no, it's kind of interesting hearing you guys say it, because it's I mean, it's been absolutely my kind of goal and intention, and it probably has been since couple of factors, but like one in particular which you'll like is after that Box Hill race. It was at the very start of March, and it had been set up for everyone to try and have a crack at the Olympic time, and I fell off after about 2K. But Nick gave me this is Nick Biddo, coach, gave me a good dressing down afterwards, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but
it's not right for this podcast.
it was along the lines of like, Dave, if you're serious, you got to want it a hell of a lot more than that. And he was absolutely right. Like I didn't back myself. I remember doing strides before that race and literally having thoughts go through my head like, you know, do I actually want to be here? Do I want to maybe just like call it a day and you know, just go and do full-time physio? I literally had those thoughts.
Wow.
For the start line and
but you didn't have them in Perth.
it was a real awakening. Like, you know, you can't have those thoughts like before you're starting a race. It's never going to work. It's never going to pan out well if that happens.
Not in the zone at all.
Absolutely. Like the opposite of being in the zone. So I really, really put my head down and spend a lot of time, you know, obviously outside of training, you know, writing some stuff down, doing a bit of reading, speaking to a few people and just getting my head in the right place. I think like in the past, it's always something you think about, oh, you got to, you know, focus on the mental side of things. But like in the last two and a half months, it's literally been the most important thing I've done. Because I think at my age and this point in my career, the actual running training is the absolute easiest part, because it's the same stuff week in, week out, day in, day out. Like, don't even have to think about that. But getting to the start line and being in the right frame of mind, that's something that historically I've been pretty patchy with, and I reckon in large parts probably explains why, you know, at different times performances have been a bit sporadic, and I'm sure they will be in the future. But you know, I got my shit together at the right time. So
yeah, you certainly did.
You're on a roll.
Can I just ask you about the idea behind going 8 minutes, so, and then having to kick home? Was that like designed for Rambo more than you, or I mean, because that seems,
I think,
a bit,
it was
of a
designed
weird
to try tactic and run quicker than I can for 3K. I wanted to beat my 3K PB just to rub it in, and then do another 2K quicker.
No, but like that's actually quite slow, Joel, because his pace was 5K, it's faster than 8 minutes. So
Dave can close like anyone. That's the thing. Like,
so was that?
I think it's look, 5Ks are a tricky distance, and it's also 3K is not long enough that you can really put yourself in a lot of lactic for a long time. You know, it's going to be over in, well, yeah, under 10 minutes, let's say that.
Joel managed to get a stitch after a lap, so.
Most people, you know, that are distance runners, you know, that sort of 5K, 10K runners, most people can nut out a 3K without too much going wrong and without totally blowing up. And I mean, it's true of any, that the longer you go, the blow ups are more and more pronounced. You know, the difference, like you think a marathon, the difference between a 208 and a 228, it might only be 30 seconds at halfway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I think particularly in the 5K it was from experience. I think any 5K race where it's been significantly less than 8 minutes at halfway just puts you at so much more risk of blowing up. So
yeah,
really we're just kind of safeguarding. And the thing is if you can, you know, be having a good day and feeling, you know, reasonably good, you can bank, you know, so 13:20 is 64 seconds a lap.
Yeah.
You know, if you close in a 59, you're already going to knock off 5 seconds there. Yeah. So you're already going to bring yourself down to 13:15. So you don't have to necessarily be going out at, you know, 13:10 pace.
Based on world records, and well, Cheptegei went even when he did the world record. But before that, the world records were always fastest in the first K, the second K, and then the last K, whereas the third and the fourth K would dip. Whereas you've kind of deliberately gone slower in the first three. Mm. And then kicked down. So yeah, it was a well-designed, well-executed race plan. If you know, because you absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and look, everyone's a little bit different. My, you know, my lactic tolerance is probably shit compared to most sort of elite level runners. So, you know, that's why my, I guess my, you know, Rambo's got a 334 next to his name for 1500. I've got a 342. So my,
you probably beat that. You probably beat that on the. Yeah, last week. Why are you laughing, Joel?
No, I'm just laughing. Dave just thinks saying all these times as if they're like so slow and then it's fucking way quicker than.
Yeah, but the eight seconds for 15 behind Rambo.
I know.
Just I'm just smoked in the last 2K.
Yeah, I'm taking the piss. Yeah. I'm just getting bored of the serious chat.
I think some people.
Yeah, we've got stupid questions coming. Trust me. All right, let's get going with the stupid question. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go on, Dave. Finish up.
Stop cutting off.
I'm just repeating myself here. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, you can always in any race if you haven't hit the wall and fallen apart, you can always make up a few seconds in the last lap. And so we factored that in. We factored that into how we paced it.
It is so true. So that's what. So many people forget that. Like as you said.
But perfect. Some people can't run 56 second laps.
No, but even it's relative. Like if you're trying to break 15,
okay, I mean,
and it's like you have to run. Yeah, don't go out at if you're trying to break 15, you don't have to go out at 2:59s. You could probably go out at fucking 3:01s and kick home.
And it's kind of banking distance rather than banking time. If you know what I mean, it's kind of like getting far along in the race, feeling good.
Exactly.
Having that's kind of a different.
Because there's a fine line. Like I know I'm very guilty of this, and like Brett always takes the piss out of me because I have two things: I either win a race and it was the easiest thing on earth, or I fucking race shit. I race shit and it was the hardest thing on earth. And Brett's like, it's because like when you're winning races and you're racing really good, like when I'm comfortable, I feel like. Ultra comfortable, and then you know it's like
absolutely.
It's like
The other thing is when you have a really good race, you automatically forget how you felt during the race because it's just true. Replaced with the ecstasy and the joy of you know having won or run a PB. You forget about it and you always go. How'd you feel? Oh, fucking great.
Yeah. How come your face looked like it was fucking inverted with your friend to go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much easier is it to like run hard at the end when you're doing well in a race versus when you're having a shocker and you've blown up? True. It's pretty hard to get yourself up for a fast last lap.
Yeah, absolutely. No question.
So true. All right, Dave. Right. This is what I ask everyone, but what was your first impression of Joel Tobin-White when you met him?
It might have to be two because he met me first when I was so young and I wouldn't even have
Doesn't matter. What was your first impression when you saw his little face?
Yeah, absolutely square.
Square face.
Oh, fucking dickhead.
Okay, so were you in the VIS with him? Because everyone's got these stories about how Joel was like there every day in the VIS.
Running around.
Never got any. The other was prancing around in the showers. That's what
Brett
said.
No, he wasn't in VIS.
Brett said that he just didn't improve at sport.
Nah, honestly, my first impressions are the same impressions I have now, which is he's one of the funniest fuckers I've ever met.
You've been much nicer about him than the others, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Hey, Dave, you missed this intro. I appreciate that, but we got a one of fucking Nick's mates, probably Nick's only mate, had said, what did he say that I was? I was just one of the
one of the background ones, one of the other ones.
Yeah, at the MTC. Just like, one of the other ones. He's just sort of there. And you can imagine that.
Jack, you got Brett, you got
more.
Dave, and then you got one of the other ones.
Yeah. And that
it triggered him, and then he went right off.
Yeah. Like he could have said, Joel's got no talent. Joel will never be a good runner. And I would have gone, oh, yeah, no worries, mate. But that one.
Okay. Dave, I got a relevant question. Yeah, that's, who's the most annoying person to train with?
Mate, I can't answer that on a podcast. No,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can. No one listens to this, Dave.
Absolutely can.
No, I don't know.
Dave's never going to
Dave knows. He knows. Who are you thinking of, Dave?